Hello everyone, and welcome back to the History of Scotland, episode 14, Alapinid Dynasty End. I want to give a quick shout out to all the reviews that have been left on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. They've been great to read, and I also appreciate all the emails I've been getting over the past weeks. The popularity of this podcast has shot up so much in the past month, and I'm so glad to be receiving all this fan support for the show. Keep them coming, guys. It really does mean a lot. Last week, we went through Cúlainn, Imlab, and Kenneth II's reign, ending with Constantine III coming to the throne after he and Kenneth III successfully plotted to remove Kenneth II from the throne after Kenneth wanted to make his son the future, and spoiler, last king of the Alapinid dynasty, Malcolm II, heir to the throne, and cut out Constantine III and Kenneth III from the succession, thus making it a more primogeniture relationship. Making sure the heirs and the sons of the grandsons and not only relative could come to the throne and be considered heirs. So in today's episode, we are finally going to close off the famous Alapinid dynasty and move into a modern medieval Scottish history of the Dunkields. But they are for a future episode. Today's episode, we'll be closing off the Alapinids with the last three kings. Constantine III, Kenneth III, obviously those two are the ones who removed Kenneth II, and finally, Kenneth II's son, Malcolm II. After this episode, next week we will do an episode looking back from the progress as a country, as a Pictish nation, to a Scoto-Alban nation. Following on from that, we'll be starting the House of Dunkeld, as I mentioned, and Duncan I. Yes, that Duncan I, and then two episodes on Macbeth, and then the long reign of Malcolm III. As I've mentioned a lot of times, and I want to keep you all in the loop, I'm planning on making the episodes on Duncan I, Macbeth, and Malcolm III longer, and spamming multiple episodes, especially with Malcolm III onwards. As I said last week, I want us to take our time and not rush these crucial kings as well of Scotland, since the medieval time is a fun period in history, apart from death, murder, plague, etc. So, without further ado, let's begin with the reign of Constantine III. Constantine III was the son of Cúlainn. Quick recap on what happened in last week's event. According to John of Fordon, Kenneth II attempted to change the succession rules, allowing the nearest survivor in blood to the deceased king to succeed, that being Malcolm II, thus securing the throne for his own descendants. He reportedly did so to exclude Constantine III and Kenneth III from the throne. The two men then jointly conspired against him, convincing in law Lady Finnenlia, daughter of Cuncar, Mormor of Angus, to kill the king. She reportedly did so to achieve personal revenge, as Kenneth II had killed her own son. Entries in the Chronicles of the Picts and Scots, collected by William of Forbes, provide the account of the killing in a revenge, but not in affiliation to Constantine or his cousins. But we can conclude that at least there was some connection between the conspiracy and the murder that took place. And the person who committed the murder, this lady, she obviously had lost her son to Kenneth II at this time. These entries, though, date to the 12th and 13th century, so it was obviously recorded a lot after the time of death. The Annals of Ulster simply record the following. Synod, son of MacCullen, Kenneth, son of Malcolm, King of Scotland, was deceitfully killed, with no indication of who killed him. In the account of John of Fordon, Constantine the Bold, son of King of Cúlainn, was plotting unnecessarily the death of the king and his son, well, being Malcolm II as well. One day, Kenneth II and his companions went hunted into the woods, at no great distance from his own abode. The hunt took him to Fettercorn, where the lady resided. She approached him to proclaim their loyalty and invited him to visit her residence. Thus, the booty trap was hidden. Inside the cottage was a statue connected by strings to a number of crossbows. If anyone touched or moved the statue, the crossbows would fire. Kenneth II gently touched the statue and was shot through by arrows sped from all sides and fell without uttering another word. The lady escaped through the woods and managed to join her abettors, Constantine III and Kenneth. The hunting companions soon discovered the bloody king. They were unable to locate the lady but burned the town to the ground. Now, as we know, this is a very mythical telling of the tale and probably very elaborate ruse, but we can at least compare and contrast that there is some relevance and truth to these stories with Kenneth the Third and Constantine the Third working with this lady to achieve their needs. A later passage of John of Fordon mentions Fingal as mother of Macbeth, but this is probably an error based on the similarity of names. Macbeth was a son of Findelic of Moray, not of a woman named Fenelia. The narrative of John of Fordon continues on to the reign of Constantine III. The day following the death of Kenneth II, Constantine the Bold, son of King Colin, usurped the throne. He had reportedly run the support of the number of nobles in the area. The throne was also claimed by his cousin Malcolm II, the son of Kenneth II, resulting in a long-lasting division of the Scottish population and conflict. Constantine III reigned for a year and a half, 18 months, continually harassed by Malcolm and his illegitimate uncle named Kenneth, a soldier of known prowess, who was an unwearied prosecutor and strove with his all might to kill him above all others. The Chronicle of the Kings of Scots shortens the reign to a year and 4 months. The source was a king list compiled during the reign of William the Lion, which was around the mid-13th century. The last king mentioned in it, it is survived as the fifth text of the Poplington manuscript. The existence of Kenneth, illegitimate uncle to Malcolm II, is not recorded in older sources. Charles Crawley suggests treating his existence with caution. John of Fordon had apparently listed this Kenneth as an illegitimate son of Malcolm I. Skene noted that this could be an error and suggested that Kenneth, son of Malcolm, was actually Kenneth III. Kenneth III was a grandson of Malcolm I rather than his son. Robert Shaw also doubted Kenneth II having a brother, illegitimate or not, who was also named Kenneth. There's a lot of Kenneths here. I don't think we need to go into any more details on that. Just know that now Constantine III has come to the throne. Kenneth II's son, Malcolm II, has rose in rebellion and Scotland is now split between the two. The Annals of Tigernach report that Constantine was killed in a battle between the Scots in 997 AD. A battle between the Scots in which fell Constantine, son of Culain, King of Scotland, and many others. Another entry of the same year reports the death of Maile Colum of Strathclyde, though it is unclear if the two deaths were connected. A Chronicle of the Kings of Scots and Picts entry adds a number of details. Constantine, son of Culain, was killed by Kenneth, son of Malcolm. Constantine's body was transported for burial to Iona. An entry in the Chronicle of Melrose describes King Constantine Cullen's son slain by a sword at the mouth of Almond in Tegok. Again, the killer is reported as Kenneth, son of Malcolm. John of Fordon's narrative is more verbose. According to it, Constantine and Kenneth, son of Malcolm, met one day by the banks of the River Almond in Lothan. They engaged in battle, resulting in great slaughter on both sides and the deaths of both leaders. The guards of Constantine fled to Kenneth III of their leader, allowing him to win the throne. This is Kenneth III, who obviously conspired against Malcolm II's father. However, news of the battle and its results reached Malcolm II in Cumbria. He learned of the death of his uncle and the rest of his faithful friends and returned to gather reinforcements for his cause, though he was defeated in his initial conflict against Kenneth III. So if we just take a step back a second, this suggests that Malcolm II at some point went to Cumbria, to the Kingdom of Strathclyde, to maybe raise more forces or gain an alliance. His uncle, so Malcolm II's uncle, was leading the army in Scotland. The army that was being led by his uncle in Scotland lost to Constantine III's army. But Constantine III, in the process, also died. So it was more of a stalemate outcome, with both armies suffering multiple casualties, with both leaders dying. Again, the uncle of Malcolm II and the current king of Alba, Constantine III. The rest of the people on Constantine III's side, so all the rest of the army and the nobles, all came to Kenneth III to give him the throne instead. They really didn't want Malcolm II to come to the throne. Once Malcolm II obviously found out about this, he obviously decided to raise more reinforcements and go and avenge not only the death of his father now, but the death of his uncle, and hopefully get the throne for himself. John of Fordon, constantly depicts Malcolm II holding Cumbria, emerging from it to combat Constantine III and Kenneth III. In 1000 AD, Malcolm reportedly defended Cumbria against the invasion of Ethelred the Unready, King of England. This will probably be one of many battles between the English and Scots. Oh, can I not wait? A relevant entry from the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle confirms that the Danish fleet which regularly raided England departed in 1000 AD. This sudden relief from attack Ethelred used to gather his forts, resources and armies. The fleet's departure in 1000 AD allowed Ethelred to carry out a devastation of Strathclyde, the motive for which is lost in history. So why did Ethelred do this? We do not know. Maybe he wanted to connect Cumbria into the lands of the Saxons. As we know in history, Cumbria is a contested land between Scotland and England. But this indicates the limits to Constantine and Kenneth's area of authority and informs us that Cumbria, Strathclyde, lay beyond them. The opponent of Ethelred is not, however, specified by the chronicle. Benjamin Hudson notes that John of Fordon was at times confused when depicting events of this period. The conflict depicted could actually be one between Ethelred and Kenneth III. Scottish and Anglo-Saxon armies fighting over control of Strathclyde. Ethelred wanted to restore Anglo-Saxon control in the area, once conquered by Edmund the Elder, who reigned in 939 to 946 AD, his grandfather. Perhaps he was desperately seeking to add some more revenue to his treasury. Kenneth and the Scots were naturally unwilling to lose an area under their own rule for two generations. James Young Simpson, who had written several articles on archaeology, observes that there were contradictory accounts concerning the location of Constantine III's death. Whilst most accounts place the battle near the River Almond, there were two rivers of that name in Scotland, one in Perthshire and one in Lafan. George Chalmers identifies the one in Perthshire to have been intended the location, but John of Fordon obviously points to Lafan, as do most other chroniclers. There are also contradictions concerning the location of battle in relation to the river. Alex Woof points out that the Chronicle of Kings of Alba reports another location for the death of Kenneth, which was probably the same location as Bellafor, mentioned alongside the Ringmonth as the major settlements of their time. Ringmonth had been identified with Rigmund as another place for St. Andrews. Although we are not too sure where he did die, the battle did take place in southern Scotland and he obviously passed away. The reputation of Constantine III was captured in the prophecy of Birchan. The prophecy said the following: a king will take the sovereignty who will not be king. After him, Scotland will be nothing. It will be weak following the strong. Though true is what my lips relate, a king with reproach above his head. Alas for Scotland during his short time. Feeble men will be about him in the reign of Scon and Milidus shields. A year and a half, a bright space, that will be his whole reign. From taking Gales, he will go to the death. He falls, his people fall. He will fight great battles in Scotland. By the disgrace of his head, he will destroy colours. He will be in communion of battle from Stirling to Abertree. Addison suggests that this would be the area from Stirling to the Abertree Sands, the traditional Scottish boundary between Danish Northumbria. Birchan gave a negative portrayal of Kenneth II as well, calling him the fat trade, or the who would bring danger on everyone. Kenneth II would attack his own people as well as his enemies, probably alluding to the fact that Kenneth killing many members of the Scottish nobility, and obviously he killed one of the kings as well, people who related to him in various ways. Hudson suspects the further details on the killings of Kenneth II could be found in lost works, part of an early Scottish literal tradition which left only fragments in later works. While Kenneth II is depicted as a strong king, Constantine III is dismissed as a failure. The length of his reign, which was only 18 months, confirms that Constantine is the failed non-king intended, a king surrounded by weak men. The poem places death by the River Tay, though this is not necessarily a contradiction to the other accounts of his death, which place him at the River Almond. The River Almond flows into the Tay in a location not far from Scone, also recorded at the place of the death of a previous king. The ominous verse which has Constantine fall with his people might allude to the end of his family, as his line probably died with him. The name Grime for his successor, Kenneth III, probably derives Grim, or Middle Irish authority. Birchan calls his man Don. As an adjective it means brown, but as a noun meaning changes to chief, depicting him as a strong stronger king. But what we can conclude is Kenneth II was considered to be a strong king. When he wanted to change the succession and Constantine III and Kenneth III killed him, the most of Scotland and the chroniclers didn't agree with this, but the nobles did, and the nobles probably agreed and went along with this because they wanted to keep the power, and primogeniture wouldn't allow them to keep said power. Obviously, with Constantine III dying, Kenneth III rose to the throne. As he came to the throne, he was going to have a rude awakening, though. After helping dispose of Malcolm II's father, Kenneth II, Malcolm, at the death of Constantine III, and with his worries that he built up during the reign in Cumbria, he sparked a further rebellion to avenge his father's and uncle's death. The primary sources concerning the life and reign of Kenneth III include chronicles entries dating to the years 1251 and 1317. They can be found in the Chronicles of the Picts and Scots by William of Forbes. The Chronicle of John of Fordon in the 14th century mentions a Grim, or Grime, reporting him killed by Malcolm II, obviously Grime being Kenneth II, but that's in the future. Charles Coley, a modern genealogist, cautions about the late date of these sources. As we all know, these were written after the time of the fact. John Bannerman theorises that Kenneth III could be a direct ancestor to Clan Macduff, which produced all Mormers and Earls of Fife from the 11th to the mid-14th century, noting that he could actually be a founder of the house, following a pattern of several Scottish clans seemingly founded by grandsons of their epigen. The only event reported in Kenneth's reign is the killing of Synod Duc MacAlpin, which was an ancestor of Malcolm II. At some point, Kenneth III tried to rally support for his throne, but people were changing sides fast, as most had actually agreed that Kenneth II's idea of sons and grandsons, of him staying king, was more important than this continued divide and rivalry of family members having to claim the throne one after the other. This civil war had to end. It was tearing Scotland apart. Although the nobles didn't want this and wanted to keep controlling king after king, the majority of the Scottish people did. Kenneth III got what men he could and went looking for battle against Malcolm. Eventually, though, he found his maker and was killed in a battle in Strathform by Malcolm II, which took place about 25th of March 1005 AD. Something I doubt Kenneth III was preparing for was the power base that Malcolm II had built up in Cumbria and the strongholds he had. He was the legitimate heir according to the succession rules of Kenneth II. When Malcolm II managed to kill him, it signified the triumph of his line and proof that the succession laws were true. He continued to rule to 1034, enjoying a long reign, and managed to leave the throne to his own descendants. However, the rivalry continued, and Malcolm II would contest and kill many of the descendants of Kenneth III. Malcolm II, by the name of his mother, was uncertain, but he was given Malcolm II in later times. He had managed to avenge his father, killing one of his father's conspirators and taking the throne for himself. Malcolm, who was born of Kenneth II and was grandson of Malcolm I, had finally ended the civil war between both sides of the family. John of Fordham writes that Malcolm defeated as well in the future a Norwegian army in almost the first days after his coronation, but this is not reported elsewhere. John states that this was the bishopry of Mortlach, later Aberdeen, and also the bishopry was founded there in thanks to the victory over the Norwegians there. Malcolm demonstrated a rare ability to survive among early Scottish kings by reigning for 29 years. As we know from this story, Constantine III and Kenneth III all lived short reigns. Kenneth II didn't live long either, or reign longer, due to obviously what happened with the conspirators. He was a clever man, an ambitious man. Breath tradition provided that the successor to Malcolm was to be selected by him from among his descendants. And with this consent, Malcolm's ministers and of church signified the end of this. Anyone had the chance to become king, and it went to a primogeniture change. ostensibly in an attempt to end the devastating feuds in the north of Scotland, but obviously influenced by the Norman feudal model, Malcolm ignored tradition and determined to retain the succession within his own line. But since Malcolm had no son of his own, he undertook to negotiate a series of dynastic marriages of his three daughters to men who he thought otherwise be his rivals, while securing the loyalty of the principal chiefs, their relatives and their clans, first the Abbot of Dunkeld, then his youngest daughter to Sigurd, Earl of Orkney, his middle daughter married Finella, Earl of Moray, and another married a certain one in the north of Scotland. This was risky business to keep the succession lines intact for his descendants to take the throne. He had no son, so any heir coming to the throne was going to be one from one of his daughters, which would actually mean the end of the Alapenid family dynasty, because it'd be a daughter's son that would come to the throne and not his own son. So thus he made the deal, got it approved, and the nobles of Scotland finally agreed. Then a renewal of Viking attacks on England happened. Malcolm II marched south to fight the English. He defeated the Angles at Carham in 1018 AD and installed his grandson Duncan, son of Abbot of Dunkeld, and his Teresa's Tanist in Carlisle as King of Cumbria that same year. According to Frederick van Bossen, the wife of Malcolm II was Gunnery, the daughter of the second Duke of Normandy. The number of daughters is contested, but this would signify a reason why he changed the laws and changed the succession to be something in similar to what the Normans and later the Kingdom of England would have, whereas the son of the king would be the heir and be the future king. Again, his three daughters were one Bayuk, who married Cinna of Dunkeld and would be the mother of the successor and the first king of the House of Dunkeld, Duncan the First. So that's the first daughter. So the first daughter, his son, her son, would be the next king and lead us into a new family dynasty in Scotland. He then obviously had two other daughters, the one who married the family of Moray and one who married the Earl of Orkney. The first reliable report of Malcolm II's reign is of an invasion of Bernicia in 1006. Perhaps this customary was a way of signifying his power base, to signify he was in charge. It involved a siege in Durham. This appears to have resulted in a heavy defeat by the Northumbrians, led by a certain Uhtred of Bavenber, later Earl of Bernicia, which is reported by the Annals of Ulster. Any Last Kingdom fans out there know what I'm talking about. A second war in Bernicia, probably in 1018, was more successful. The Battle of Carham by the River Tweed was a victory for the Scots, led by Malcolm II and the men of Strathclyde, led by their king, Owen the Bold. By this time, Earl Uhtred may have been dead, and Ettrick Hackerson was appointed Earl of Northumbria by his brother-in-law, Canute the Great. Although his authority seems to have been limited to the south, the former kingdom of Doria, and he took no action against the Scots so far as he knew. Uhtred's brother surrendered Lufan to Malcolm II, presumably in the aftermath of the defeat of Carham. This is likely to have been the lands between Dunbar and the Tweed, as other parts of Lufan had been under Scots control before this time, as we previously mentioned in the battle between Malcolm II and Kenneth III. It had been suggested that Canute received tribute from the Scots for Lufan, but as he had likely received none from the Bernician earls, this is not very provable. Canute, the great Canute, had a great and prosperous relationship with Scotland, reports from the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle. Although he had to lead an army into Scotland on his return from a pilgrimage from Rome, the chronicle dates this to 1031, but there are reasons to suppose that it should be dated to 1027. One of the chronicles reports the expedition soon afterwards, describing Malcolm as powerful in resource and arms, very Christian in faith and deed. Ralph claims that peace was made between Malcolm and Canute through the intervention of Richard, the Duke of Normandy, brother of Canute's wife Emma. Richard died in 1027, and this closed in time the events. It had been suggested the root of quarrel between Canute and Malcolm after this lies in Canute's pilgrimage to Rome and the coronation of the Holy Roman Emperor Conrad II. Throwback to our episode where we go over these stories, Please check it out. We'll do another one in the future, I am sure. But this is where Canute and Rudulf, King of Burgundy, had place of honour. If Malcolm were present and had repeated mentions of his piety in the annals, make it quite possible that he'd made a pilgrimage to Rhodes as well, as did Macbeth in later times. Then the coronation would have allowed Malcolm to publicly snub Canute's claim of overlordship over Scotland. If you remember a few episodes ago, Canute and the past kings of the Anglo-Saxons, the Kingdom of Wessex, and obviously now the Kingdom of England, sometimes claimed overlordship over Scotland. Obviously, throwback to the River Festival, where all kings in Britain came to submit to the Anglo-Saxon king. But maybe Malcolm snubbed this, and this is why Canute had become mad at him and wanted to invade. Canute obtained rather less than previous English kings, a promise of peace and friendship rather than promise of aid on land and sea that Edgar and others had obtained, obviously Edgar being the one that had everyone submit to him. The sources say that Malcolm was accompanied by one of two other kings, certainly the future King Macbeth and perhaps a certain King of the Man and Isles, and a descendant of Ivar the Boneless. The Anglo-Saxon Chronicle remarks of the submission, but he, Malcolm, adhered to that only for a little while, thus meaning he only submitted to Canute for a short time. Canute was soon occupied in Norway against Olaf Haraldsson and appears to have had no future involvement in Scotland. Olaf, a daughter of Malcolm, married Sigurd Haraldsson, Earl of Orkney. Their son, Thorif Sigurdsson, was said to be 5 years old when Sigurd was killed on the 23rd of April 1014 in the Battle of Clontarf. One of these sagas states that Thorif was raised at Malcolm's court and was given the Moradom of Caithness by his grandfather. Thorfinn says in the saga that he was the ally of the kings of the Scots and counted on Malcolm's support to resist the tyranny of the Norwegian King Olaf Haraldsson. If Malcolm exercised control over Moray, which is far from being generally accepted, then the annals record a number of events pointing to a struggle for power in the north. In 1020, Macbeth's father was killed by the sons of his brother, Mael Brittain. Despite the accounts of the Irish annals, English and Scandinavian writers appear to see Macbeth as a rightful king of Moray. This is clear from the descriptions of the meeting with Canute in 1027. Before the death of Malcolm, Malcolm was followed as king or earl by his brother Gilacrim, husband of Gruach, a granddaughter of Kenneth III. It had been supposed that Macbeth was responsible for the killing of this person in 1032, but if Macbeth had a cause for a feud in the killing of his father in 1020, Malcolm too had reason to see this person dead as she was a descendant of Kenneth III. Malcolm had no living sons, and the threat to his plans for succession was obvious. As a result, the following year, another descendant of Kenneth III was killed to stop any future rival to his heirs. It has been traditionally supposed that King Owain the Bold of Strathclyde died at the Battle of Carham and that the kingdom passed into the hands of the Scots afterwards. This is the battle where Scotland lost to Uhtred of Bebbanburg. Bit of a throwback earlier in the episode. This rests on some very weak evidence, however. It is far from certain that Owain died at Carham, and it is reasonably certain that there were kings of Strathclyde as of late 1054, when Edward the Confessor sent Earl Sidward to install Malcolm, son of King of Cumbrians. The confession is old, but probably inspired by William of Malmesbury and embezzled by John of Fordon, but there is no firm evidence that the Kingdom of Strathclyde was a part of the Kingdom of Scots, rather than a loosely subjugated kingdom instead, by the time Malcolm II of Scotland and great-grandson Malcolm III came to the throne. By the time of the 1030s, Malcolm's sons, if he had any, were dead. The only evidence that he did have a son or sons is one in the Chronicle, where Canute is said to have stood as godfather to a son of Malcolm. His grandson, Thorfinn, would have been unlikely to be accepted as King of Scots as well, as he had chose sons of his daughter, Befoc, who was married to Cynibh, late abbot of Dunkeld, and perhaps Mora of Athol, to be the successor. It may be no more coincidence, but in 1027, the Irish annals had reported the burning of Dunkeld. Although no mention is made of the circumstances, Malcolm's chosen heir, and the first certainly known in Scotland, was Duncan the First. It is possible that a third daughter of Malcolm married a future earl, and there was a grandson there, but this rests on relatively weak evidence. Malcolm I finally died in 1034. Given the date on the 25th of November 1034, the king's lists say that he died at Glems, variously describing him as a most glorious or most victorious king. The Annals of Tigernach report that Malcolm, King of Scotland, the honour of all west of Europe, died. The Prophecy of Birch End, perhaps the inspiration for John of Arden and Andrew of Wharton's accounts where Malcolm is killed fighting bandits, say that he died by violence fighting the suggested Vikings of Moray. Perhaps the most notable feature of Malcolm's death is the account of the Moraians, matched by the silence of the Irish Annals, which tells us that Duncan I became king and ruled for 5 years and 9 months after that. But that's a future episode which we'll get into very soon. As I mentioned earlier, Malcolm II didn't have any sons alive, but his daughter Beth did, and his name was Duncan I. Yes, the Duncan I that appears in the story of Macbeth. But what's more important here is Duncan taking the throne after his grandfather had died, suggesting the change of succession rules that Kenneth II created are now being followed. Thus, the sons and grandsons that are close blood ties to the king will become heirs from now on, leaving behind the similar Anglo-Saxon system of any relative has a claim. The Chronicle of the Kings of Alba states, Duncan succeeded to the throne as a material grandson of Malcolm II. The House of Dunkeld was therefore closely related to the House of Alpin. But let's leave Duncan I there, just as he's coming to the throne of Scotland after his grandfather had passed away, serving Scotland many glorious years of rule. I wonder if he knew his reign would become so popularised by a story about his death, that being Duncan I. But so finally ends the Alapinid dynasty. This dynasty has reigned over Scotland for a considerable amount of time, but with the dynasty end, we can now safely say this is the end of the Dark Ages, and thus begins the Middle Ages we know of today. I cannot wait for us to get further into this. I, for one, will miss the Dark Ages, though. As for me personally, the Dark Ages weren't so dark and contained so many fundamental stories that helped build the Scotland that we know of today. I will miss the stories we have grown to love. We will finally close the book on these times next week, where we can go over the common misconceptions of the Dark Ages in Britain and Scotland. As I mentioned, next week we'll be also looking back at the progress as a country, from a Pictish nation. I want to give a quick shout out to all the reviews that have been left on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. They've been great to read, and I also appreciate all the emails I've been getting over the past weeks. The popularity of this podcast has shot up so much in the past month. I'm so glad to be receiving all this fan support for the show. Keep them coming, guys. It really does mean a lot. As always, though, please review if you haven't. Our podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, Amazon Music, and Google Podcasts. Next podcast will be next week, as always, around Sunday to Monday. But until then, stay safe, have a great week, and I'll all catch you on the next one. Peace.